No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. Episode number 162, our 162nd show of Talking Arizona Cardinals. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today Sports Media Group NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site, as well as the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, is there? Would you say that it's a positive time, indifferent time? Where, you know, or are we kind of on a sadder side of the Cardinals football news?
You know, I think it's a good time. You look at it, there's definitely some. You know, there's definitely some. Something to it. There's some question marks. We definitely have seen Bruce Arians' ire be raised by his wide receiver group. But outside of that, there hasn't been too many negatives. Obviously, we've only seen the second and third stringers for the majority of the time. There's been, 10 snaps from the first team. All, 20, including offense and defense combined. But in those 20 snaps, I think you were kind of excited. You saw a play that we'll talk about on defense, and then the offense is exactly what you wanted to see even before the penalty that, wiped out the good field goal, and then they continued to drive. I think you were excited about what you saw out of the offense.
Yeah, and there was good things to talk about. That's what we're going to do. We're going to review the Raiders game, the game against the Raiders, which the Cardinals won 20-10 on Saturday night at University of Phoenix Stadium. So we're going to talk back. We're going to talk a little bit about the show that way. So we're going to talk about Seth and I are each going to tell you guys two things that we liked and two things we didn't like. We're going to talk about which players helped their stock, which players saw their stock fall. We're going to go over some of the injuries and the receiver play, offensive line, some of the positional stuff, and then we'll look ahead to the game this weekend against the Bears and what are three things each of us wants to see the Cardinals do there. So we'll go ahead and get started, and let's talk about the things that we liked and didn't like. So let's start with you, Seth. What was the first thing that you liked about that?
You know, I talked about it at the start, but there was a singular play on defense that really kind of got me excited, and that was towards the end of the first team drive where they kicked a field goal and missed it. I'm not even sure still who blocked it or got a piece of it, but Tyrann Mathieu made a play on the ball, receiver well short of the first down, and that was one of those. Wow, that's Tyrann Mathieu plays. You know, he didn't make a pass breakup, intercept the ball. It was nothing spectacular, but it was one of those plays where you saw him react read, and those buzzwords that you hear during the draft process, something like click and close, where he just exploded to the play, made a sound tackle, and brought the receiver down short of the first down marker. And that, you know, that explosiveness, that ability to close on the ball in a, that was something that we missed from him last year. And we talked about his importance on our kind of pre-training camp show and what we needed to see from him to know that the defense would be able to overcome the loss of Calais Campbell, and overcome the loss of Tony Jefferson and all these guys that they lost. And again, it was 7-8 plays, but it was exactly what you wanted to see from him, to make a play like that, to close so quickly on a wide receiver that was open running a route just short of the first down marker, and to see him make a great tackle and really kind of get the defense off the, you know, the first unit defense off the field, holding the Raiders to, I think it was a 52, 53 yard field goal. And I don't know, maybe Janikowski just shanked it, but it looked like somebody tipped it. And it was exactly what we needed to see in my mind from him.
For me, the first positive, I'll go to the second team after that, but the first thing that I wanted to see that I was really happy about is the fact that with Justin Bethel out there, he didn't get exposed. That was, you know, for what we've seen from the cornerback position, we saw what we needed to. That, now granted, it wasn't Derek Carr and it wasn't him against like Crabtree because Amari Cooper was out, but still, Justin Bethel didn't get embarrassed. And the more you can say, hey, we don't hear Justin Bethel's name at all, that's good. Because we don't hear Patrick Peterson's name much during the game either.
Ever.
And so this is, as long as that's just kind of, they're having to do check downs and things like that, it is, if that becomes the norm, that's going to be a great, great thing in addition to Matthew playing well. And he's starting to look right again in practice. He's making plays. So he's on the right trajectory to be back where he should be when the season starts. And for me, the number two positive for me was Drew Stanton. You know, people are talking about, he locked up the backup job, which we always thought he did anyway. I mean, to be honest, we always thought he had it locked up to begin with, but to see Stanton play effectively throwing the ball, like, he was playing in rhythm. He had poise. He wasn't errant on his throws. It gave you some promise. It gave you some promise as to what the Cardinals could do if they have to go a game or two without Palmer. And also perhaps looking beyond 2017, if we do end up having what you supposed in our last show, that's going to be the Stanton versus Gabbert quarterback competition of the century, heading into 2018.
Who's not excited for that? when you look at it, though, part of what made Stanton play so well and part of what made Palmer's night so effective and easy was the work of the offensive line. You didn't see DJ Humphreys, which I think is the only disappointment, but John Wetzel's filled in at left tackle, played well. Mikey Potty was opening holes in the run game. AQ Shipley and Evan Bame, you know, rounding out that interior offensive line, getting some movement up front. And Jared Valdir just looks like he's ready to road grade on the right side. Again, no Khalil Mack, no Bruce Irvin, no stars of the Raiders defense, but they were able to move the ball, not just with David Johnson making spectacular plays, but when Chris Johnson came in, they gave Carson Palmer what seemed like hours to throw the football. And honestly, that's all you really wanted to see, right? Like, you keep Palmer clean, open up some running lanes, and get the heck out of there. And they did that, but they did it so effectively and so quickly, and it was nice to see. And even the second team with Stanton, he had to do some evasive maneuvering at times, and we'll get to one of the reasons why in a second. But I thought, you know, I thought Cole Toner, again, looked great. There was a play, especially on a screen, where you saw coming out of the backfield on the screen, and Toner got to his guy and was able to make a block, and Ellington basically ran into him, and it's like, what are you doing? Like, cut inside that. But to see the way those guys were moving, Caleb Johnson, Cole Toner, Ulrich John was, you know, graded the best offensive lineman in the game by Pro Football Focus. You know, we've talked about him and that he's kind of made a statement of being good enough to make this team over who, I have no idea. But he definitely has made a statement so far that he belongs on this roster, and I think that's exciting to have.
And one other small positive was, you know, David Johnson played, I think it was six plays or four plays on the field, and he got the ball three times. What I loved was how he, I mean, the way he looked, and especially on that one 10-yard run to the outside where he had three stiff arms, it was what you wanted to see. He played just enough. He got a little bit of contact. He got popped once, which you worry a little bit, but at the same time, you want him to get back into physical shape for football so that he's ready for those hits and he has body as confidence. So that was another positive for me, is to see him in that brief moment. Now, let's turn to the negatives. For you, what was your first negative?
I think the first negative had to be the O-line depth. And we kind of hinted at it with Drew Stanton and then with poor Blaine Gabbert. You know, there's not a Blaine Gabbert apologist on these interwebs than myself, but that guy had no time, and I think it triggered some memories for him, and you'll talk about that shortly, but he started to make some Blaine Gabbert-esque plays. He settled down in the fourth quarter, threw a catchable ball to Jeremy Ross that ended up mysteriously injuring Jeremy Ross. One of those, oh, I can't believe I dropped a touchdown.
I'm hurt. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Played by Jeremy Ross. But I think especially Will Holden and Dorian Johnson, you don't necessarily judge a rookie class on their fourth and fifth round picks, but Dorian Johnson played Trevor Knight snaps. I mean, we were joking about that before the show. He literally played the four snaps that Trevor Knight played. And Will Holden looked completely outmanned and outmatched against.
Flagged a couple times for holding. Not what you want to see in a game.
I think two sacks as well. And just, I mean, not what you want. And again, they're fourth and fifth round picks. Nothing expected of them except to be on the roster. But in your newest 53-man projection, you had both guys being cut. And again, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Talent on the roster dictates that sometimes draft picks get cut. But you would like to see drafted offensive linemen beat out undrafted offensive linemen, and John Wetzel and Ulrich John both are looking far superior at this moment to Dorian Johnson and Will Holden. And yes, I know that they have NFL experience. Yes, I know that they're, you know, quote unquote veterans compared to rookies, but it literally is night and day when those guys are on the field, or in Dorian Johnson's chance, them just being on the field.
And as I was there at the game watching it, I didn't see a lot of negatives. I mean, there were a few individual negatives that there were to pick on, but overall, I thought it was as good as a preseason game as you'd want to see, because the starters were effective. We saw Drew Stanton play well, and then the rest of the guys, the young guys, the third stringers, the fourth stringers, the guys battling for the roster, didn't screw things up. So we saw the starters and backups, the guy who's going to be on the roster, be effective, and then the rest of the game, they didn't mess it up. So it was really, really, really kind of good to see. It wasn't dominant, and it wasn't pretty at times, but they did just enough. Just the one negative play, you know, as we're talking about, this is the summer of Blaine Gabbert, so I have to talk a little bit about Gabbert here, is that one play, he scrambled away, and it looked like he was going to scramble, then decided to throw the ball away, only decided to throw the ball too late, and so one of those four sacks was kind of on him for not getting rid of the ball quickly enough.
But again, I think that goes back, and it doesn't excuse the play, and it's what you and I have talked about quite a bit on here. It's what we've been the concern is with Blaine Gabbert, but I don't necessarily blame him. And outside of you can't make a stupid play like that. Like, as soon as you get outside the pocket, just throw the ball away. Don't try to make a play. Don't try to run the ball, but then also don't be don't be afraid. Like, and that's what that looked like. That was, as you said, that was the one negative out of Gabbert. But I think he responded well right after that. My second negative was Kerwin Williams. We've talked about him on the show. I mean, with the TJ Logan injury, he's virtually a lock for the roster. We've thought he was before TJ Logan injury. However, one thing we know with Bruce Arians, and one thing we have seen ad nauseum from Bruce Arians, he will absolutely bench a guy. And in Kerwin Williams, you know, kind of roster spot where he's, you know, a third, maybe fourth running back and return man and such, he will get cut if he continues to fumble the ball. Now, it was just a fumble, you know, it's just a preseason. But that, I mean, we've seen it with J.J. Nelson, his rookie year, where he fumbled, what, one punt return, and then he never was back there again to ever do it again. Like, not get an opportunity and then fumble the ball. Like, it can't happen with Arians. And again, these are, I mean, about and how much we're nitpicking, we're talking about a rookie who played four snaps and one boneheaded play on quarterback, and then a play by your third string running back. You cannot be upset by what you saw on Saturday night, but the Cardinals, but there are things that you want to point out. It's not perfect. It's still preseason. Things happen, but those were, you know, kind of the two negatives that I took away from it, but they're so minuscule in the scheme of what we saw that I think you're just excited.
So, I mean, I think that's enough where we could talk about that wraps up this portion of the show, Rise Up, See Red, the positives and negatives from the Raiders game. So coming up next on Rise Up, See Red, we're going to talk about players who help themselves, their stock is rising, and whose stock is falling. That's coming up next on Rise Up, See Red. We're back on Rise Up, See Red. We're going to talk about the players who, and we briefly discussed this, but whose stock is up, whose stock is down. First and foremost, stock up. I think this, whose stock has risen the most over the play on Saturday, has to be Drew Stanton, who really, I mean, really established himself again. The money stat was from Kent Summers. He tweeted he was, you know, it was 11-15 on Saturday. He completed 11 passes all of last preseason.
Right, and he looked more confident. He looked like the guy that Bruce Arians always tells us about. I think in the end, you were just happy to see competency, ability to move the offense really effectively from both quarterbacks. But Stanton, I think he kind of slammed the door shut on the idea of Blaine Gabbert being the backup or Drew Stanton getting cut. You and I have talked about it quite a bit, but it was never going to happen. But I think, you know, outside of the maybe 10 to 20% of guys that just are still Drew Stanton sucks, I don't see what he does. It was pretty obvious to the other, you know, 80% that there's the reason he's here.
And, you know, actually, if there's a way that this offseason could have gone with the narrative quarterbacks, I think it went perfectly. You have Gabbert impressing. So they signed Gabbert, this reclamation project. He's beginning to impress. And so people start giving some buzz about him and his future with the team. Could he be the backup? And then Arians even kind of mentioned, kind of fuels the fire a little bit. That's why he's here, you know, to compete for that. But then the narrative shifts to Stanton and how important he is, how much Arians trusts him, what a perfect camp he's having, how much Carson Palmer trusts him. And then on top of that, then the performance on Saturday, the way the storyline for the quarterbacks has gone was perfect. You know, Gabbert got hyped up, then Stanton came roaring back, and then his stock has risen. So I think it's a perfect scenario for the quarterbacks.
It is, and it's what you want to see out of this entire team. It's exciting to know that Palmer was looking crisp I mean, I think one thing that we forgot to mention was, and you know, I've watched the play four times now. That deep shot that he missed to Jaron Brown, I think that's twofold. One, I think that has to do with him not practicing very much, and there is some rhythm, timing that's still missing. You know, you figure Jaron Brown was out most of last year, so they probably haven't really thrown a ton. But also, the other thing is, and if you go back and look, Palmer looked like he wasn't ready, and not that I blame him at all, but he wasn't ready to make a deep throw in the preseason. And again, I don't.
And he did on that one throw. He did throw the ball ahead. It was a little bit earlier than you think that he wanted to do it. So he had got a little too much air under it because he had some pressure in his face. So,
And that's what I mean. I don't necessarily – it wasn't a bad thing, but, you know, you would kind of like to see – and he even talked about it after the game. He lamented missing that big throw. But, again, do you really want to see Palmer take a shot, second snap of the preseason or third snap of the preseason and in preseason game one for him? No, not really. So, in the end, the one thing that you haven't seen from Blaine Gabbert that we've already seen history with Carson Palmer, and then we saw it a little bit, was the ability to push the ball down the field vertically. We saw it a little bit on Saturday with Drew Stanton. We haven't seen it with Blaine Gabbert yet, but again, I would say 80% of that has been not the fault of his. Maybe game four, I don't know how much we'll see Palmer, if at all. And so maybe we'll see, you know, a whole half of Stanton and a whole half of Gabbert, or maybe we'll see one quarter of Stanton, then two quarters of Gabbert, and he'll get some time with maybe the ones or the twos and get a chance to push that ball vertical. But you have to be excited with what the quarterback room has looked like. I think you have to be excited with how the tight end room has looked. And that's something that I think we can talk about stock up with, is you've seen how good Troy Nicholas and Jermaine Gresham can be. They were effective run blocking. They both have made nice catches in the preseason. I think you and I especially have talked about that we would like to see Gresham to his contract extent, not earn his contract in the fact that he's not, you know, of the ability to earn it, but have the opportunity.
Produce.
Yeah, have the opportunity to produce. Because you and I both believe, and we've seen, you know, in his history, he's a two-time Pro Bowler, that he's done it before. So it's not, you know, anything else other than that. But I think the tight end room, if Ioane Moma and Hakeem Vallis are making it tough on Bruce Arians, you know, we talked about only keeping three tight ends, and both Vallis and Moma are, I mean, can you really cut them at this point? They both have played really well in the run game. Moma is clearly a better receiving option than Vallis, but, you know, it's good to have a blocking tight end like Vallis on the roster that can get in there and stick his nose in, especially, you know, God forbid, injuries creep up for Gresham or Nicholas again.
And another stock up for me would be the one that the linebacker everyone's talking about, Josh Bynes, the guy they signed off the street, a veteran, really, really, really helped his case as –
Well, of course, you know, the media talked about him today, and then he left injured.
And then he got hurt. Yes, that's exactly what happened. Bruce Arians hasn't, you know, brought up that promise or anything. But, no, he looked great. And when he was signed, based on the production he had in his career, I thought the moment they signed that he was a guy who probably would end up making the roster. I still think they're going to end up with five inside linebackers, but it's going to make it hard to cut him It sounds like they're going to have a spot for Scooby Wright. So I think they're going to overload that room, and it's going to be Bynes, if not Wheeler, if not Philip Wheeler, but you know, Wheeler's been hurt. So
I was going to say, has he even played yet? I don't feel like
no.
He has. Yeah, exactly. I didn't think so. Again, that's the frustrating thing about camp right now is that we've got a lot of guy like outside of DJ Humphreys and John Brown, there hasn't been any, you know, significant injuries of importance, but there's been a lot of guys that maybe you were hoping to see make this roster that have been nicked up, and that's kind of that's irritating. But I agree with you on Bynes. I thought he was maybe the best defender. I don't know. Did you see the Pro Football Focus grades though? Cap, he keeps making noise. But I thought Kareem Martin also played well, which again we've talked about. Like this is a good problem to have. It's a good thing to see a guy like Cap Cappy that you could probably get on to the practice squad. Push a guy like Kareem Martin to all of a sudden realize or reach his potential. But overall, I've just been impressed with the play of guys like Cappy and, like I said, Kareem Martin. Bynes was flying all over the place. You know, we're not looking at Chandler Jones. We're really not looking at Marcus Golden at this point. Like maybe Golden, you know, we shouldn't expect, but we expect them to
be. I kind of do.
Are. Right. And that's what I'm saying. Maybe we shouldn't, because he's only a second year guy and it's only been 1 year of this production. But you know, you and I are taking, maybe we're taking him for granted in just assuming that he's going to be another, maybe not 12 and a half sack guy, but you know, maybe an 8 to 10 sack guy this year. And that he's going to be that dominant run, you know, defender on the edge. And we're assuming that. And so you're wanting to see Kareem Martin, you're wanting to see Jarvis Jones, who we have not seen at all. You see Cappy, Josh Bynes. That's why we want to see Philip Wheeler, even who we saw for, what, 5-7 snaps. We know what to expect. We haven't seen Daniel Buchanan at all, but we kind of know what to expect.
Right. So and Cappy.
Yeah.
You know, for me, Cappy is a guy to watch, especially as Jarvis Jones continues to be injured. Cappy's for a guy for me to watch and see. You know, he could make a push for the roster.
Right, because we know how Arians is with that, and you know, I think we've talked about it. Maybe I've just written about it. I don't remember, but I thought we've talked about that. You know, they really kind of bargain hunted for Jarvis Jones. It's not like they paid him anything at all. When you look at it from that perspective, and then you look at it from the perspective of Cappy has been kind of playing like Marcus Golden. He plays with his hair on fire. He looks like a guy that you want on your roster. And yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Like it seems almost like a foregone conclusion that Jarvis Jones is on this roster, but we know Arians and he doesn't really have a tolerance for this, right? He doesn't have a tolerance for guys that aren't healthy. And even if they're just backup players, you know, if you're getting a guy like Cap Cappy that's performing consistently every single preseason game for a veteran that's never really performed in Pittsburgh in his 8 years per Ron Wolfley, or you know, and then doesn't even play at all during the most of training camp and none of the preseason, like,
and he's got a back problem. That's gonna, you know, the yeah, when they said he's got a leg injury that's affected by his back, and he had the, you know, an epidural. I'm like, I've done that. I've literally done that before. When your leg, you have leg pain, and it's because you have stuff in your lower back, so you get epidural injection to hopefully it alleviates. But he's been started practicing. He just hasn't been playing yet.
And you know, amazingly, and well, I know we're going to get to this, but amazingly, a lot of guys were starting practice.
Yeah, amazingly enough. Another guy whose stock went up simply because we didn't hear anything about it would be Brandon Williams. There were no big plays, but there were no big plays either. He was much better. Now, granted, he was playing against – he wasn't playing against top receivers, but he wasn't getting beat against Dallas. So right. He wasn't getting beat. He wasn't making any plays, but he wasn't getting beat. So that was kind of the thing I kind of enjoyed out of the defensive backfield is that I didn't see really anything good or bad out of the defensive backfield with the exception of the one missed tackle by Tremont Williams when he was in the game.
Well, and I think you saw the adjustment that Buda Baker, he's going to be very good. Like, there's zero doubt in my mind that he's going to be one of the better defensive rookies in the NFL this year. But I think you also saw the adjustment that got players like him. You know, we saw it with Patrick Peterson. Tyrann Mathieu didn't really have it, but, and this isn't taking anything away from anybody else, but, Matthew's kind of an anomaly of a player in and of himself. But he just has to learn to, you can't be physical down the field. And that's how they're taught at Washington. And, Marcus Peters has roughly 9,000 pass interference calls in his first 2 years. and he's still a great cornerback. Like, it's just, you're going to live with those mistakes. You're going to live with those. But we saw it on Saturday. Again, it's not a big deal. It's a learning curve. He's got to learn it. Peterson was abysmal at that his rookie year. Like, it's just one of those things that LSU, teaches their defensive backs. And we've seen it with Morris Claiborne. We've seen it with, Patrick Peterson. We've seen it with all of those guys. And then again, you talk about UW and we've seen it with Marcus Peters. And now we're seeing a little bit with Buda Baker. And again, it's not a bad thing. It's just, it's a reminder that, okay, these guys are going to be rookies of the year. They're not, necessarily going to be fighting for all pro teams, because they still have out. And sometimes it's a good reminder for even people like me who are like, God, Tyrann Mathieu, they're going to be the best, two slot cornerbacks in the NFL together. And it's like, oh yeah, he's going to get called for about 10 pass interference calls this year because he's going to forget that he can't touch people.
For me, the last, I don't know if you could say his stock went up, but Robert Kimdichie, again, looked good. And so he's going to push Frosty Rucker for playing time this year, which is exactly what you want to see. He was disruptive. He was in the backfield, and he made plays, too, more importantly.
Yeah, this time, instead of just being disruptive, I think he had, two tackles for loss?
Yeah.
That's so, so exciting. And you're right. Again, that's not really a stock up. That's a stock staying constant and based on what he's done so far throughout the summer, throughout training camp and preseason game one. But hope of what he was last year, that's 100% stock up, right? So we'll continue to just be happy to see him continue to grow and play so well. I think one stock down, and again, it's like Buda Baker. I wouldn't even call it a stock down for Baker. I wouldn't really call it a stock down for Hassan Reddick, but you just remember that they're rookies. And Hassan especially, you remember that he's learning how to play a new position. And I think we've seen that in a couple of instances in the games. And I think it was a big reminder on the big run by DeAndre Washington in the game against the Raiders, where if he had played inside linebacker for 3 years or 4 years in college, and he's been learning how to read his keys and flow into, the fill gaps and make plays, there's no issue. But he hasn't. He's never done it. So to expect him to have mastered it at this point is nothing. But again, I just think it's always a good reminder, and I wrote about this. It was a good reminder for me that, he's still learning. And in spite of all the good that we've heard about him all camp, the goal is still to see him be kind of a part-time player that is used more in the role of a defensive weapon as opposed to the starting inside linebacker that just plays inside linebacker.
Anybody that you saw that whose stock fell at all?
I mean, other than the two rookies that we talked about and Dorian Johnson and Will Holden. No, and I think there's even more like stock ups that we can talk about because we saw Pierre Olsen start to make a little more plays this week, or Olsen Pierre, whatever. I can never remember his name. But, you know, we saw him make. I think, you know, overall, I would be hard pressed to really find anybody. I think, like I said, you kind of say, okay, you're reminded that Hassan Reddick is probably not a guy you want starting full time at inside linebacker right now, just from the fact that he's never played it before. So it's understandable. So I'm trying to think stock down Jeremy Ross, maybe, you know, screwing up poor Blaine Gabbert's great throw that he made. It wasn't even a great throw, just the great job of actually standing in the pocket and delivering the pass, you know, the biggest knock on him. He finally does it, and Jeremy Ross screws it up.
Anything else on that? So let's wrap that up, that section of the that segment of the Rise Up Seabird podcast. We'll be back, and we'll talk about some of the position battles, some of the things that the Coach Arians has been talking about in some positions. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Seabird. We're back on Rise Up Seabird, and we've been talking about before. We talked about the stock up, stock down. Before we go into previewing what we want to see from the Bear, from the Cardinals against the Bears this coming Saturday night, we want to talk about particularly some of the things we've been hearing. Bruce Arians completely aired out the wide receiver room completely. Just completely lit them on fire and said, okay, now figure out what that you're going to do. Said, you know, after in the spring, he said, you know, I think we've got 12 receivers in the room who could play in the NFL, who can make an NFL roster. On Monday, he said, I think maybe there are two. Now, this was obviously a little bit exaggeration on both parts, but he was very unpleased with the receiver room, and he excluded Larry Fitzgerald and Jerron Brown from that mix. What's there to say about that? I mean, we haven't seen great receiver play yet, but Cardinals to do, because as we've talked about, their depth chart is pretty set. They're going to have Fitz. They're going to have John Brown, injured as it may be. They're going to have Jerron. They're going to have Chad Williams. You think that it would have J.J. Nelson, and Britton Golden has been games, has been nails.
Yeah, and, you know, this was what you and I talked about when he kind of made those comments. And I'm always okay being the bad guy. I really don't care. And this is, you know, what I wrote about, you know, we talked about this, and I didn't agree with his statement and then Larry Fitzgerald's statement, no matter how much more both of those guys know about wide receiver play than I could ever dream of. When you looked at their wide receiver room, they may have a bunch of guys that can make a roster, but they're, you know, fifth and sixth receivers. Nobody really was wide receiver two on this roster. Nobody was really the guy. You have Larry Fitzgerald, 34 this year, right?
Something like that, turning 33 or 34.
Yeah. So you have Larry Fitzgerald, who's 34, and he's your clear number one. And that's not a shot at Fitzgerald. That's a testament to his greatness. But still, he's your clear number one. I think we can agree that that might be a slight problem. Then your number two was John Brown, who's coming off a season filled with numerous injuries, numerous circumstances that make you wonder if he can regain the form that he had in the past. And then your number three is a 160-pound man And then your number four is a guy coming off a major ACL tear. It's as though you were coming into this year with Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd putting up, you know, almost 1,000 yards, John Brown coming off his first 1,000-yard season. And then, oh, by the way, we've got this kid, Jerron Brown, who we love, and then J.J. Nelson is your fifth wide receiver. Like, that's not what you were going into. And we saw how that turned out in 2016 for the Cardinals. And then you came into 2017 with all of those questions, including Larry. And Larry, I know it's blasphemy, but you're still expecting a 34-year-old to provide you 110 receptions for 1,200 yards and, you know, eight touchdowns. That's still what we all are expecting from Fitz because that's how great he is. And then there was a lot of hope after that. And, you know, it just – and then when you draft a guy in the third round, you can't cut him. I mean, Buster Davis, I guess, right? Like, you can cut Buster Davis, but then you're talking about your third, your fourth, your fifth, and your sixth-round picks all not making the roster. Like, and so you're going to take your lumps with Chad Williams in season one. And – quite frankly, it wasn't, you weren't going to expect anything out of Chad Williams. Anything you got from Chad Williams was just gravy to go along with the rest of your roster. And so at this point, like you said, you have your five, and then Britton Golden is the kind of wild card that has produced in the NFL, catching the ball, is a solid special teams player, so he's likely going to make the roster unless, you know, you had a guy like Krishan Hogan or Chris Hubert that, or, you know, steps up, or Carlton Aguadosi or Aaron Dobson. And you know, Hubert looks like he forgets to run how to run routes a lot of the time. Hogan's kind of been hidden, and I, you know, I'm speculating at this point that maybe they're looking to practice squad him. And then Dobson and Aguadosi are never on the field because they're injured. Now, I think Dobson came back today, if I read right.
Gone since the start of camp, essentially.
Right, and Chad Williams came back today from his shin splints, and then John Brown came back today, but also after practice, basically, I don't want to say fired back at Bruce Arians, but kind of responded to Arians like, dude, I'm hurt. I'm trying, you know, I don't want to make it worse, and I can't make myself heal faster. You know, it is what it is. Like, I, John Brown is a really good number two receiver if you get 2015 John Brown. Again, that's not something we know if we're going to get. J.J. Nelson is, at the very best, a great number four receiver. He might be a good number three receiver, but when you look at, you know, his statistics, outside of touchdowns, he really isn't a producer. He's a big play guy. He's a guy that can make big plays in the passing game for you, but he's not a guy you're going to throw the ball to, you know, 10 times a game and hope to get six catches a game out of him. He's a guy you're going to throw to three times a game and hope to get two catches out of him. And so, cause I think he ended up with 35 receptions last year to go along with six touchdowns. Cause that's what he is. You know, you're going to throw the ball to him 50 times a year. He's going to catch hopefully 40 and turn. I mean, heck, if he just turns four of those into touchdowns, that's a great percentage. And so when you look at it, I thought there was concern in June when the statement was made, and now it's kind of coming to fruition, and it is what it is at this point. But, and I saw somebody tweet me or say something, I can't remember where it was at, said something to me of, you know, everybody talks about they should have traded up for a quarterback, but if they were going to trade up for anybody, they should trade up for a wide receiver. But it's like, you know, Corey Davis was coming off an ankle. He didn't test at all. We saw on film he was very good, but, you know, it's not like he was exactly a sure thing. Mike Williams may not play until October or November. And then John Ross is, you know, his knees are made of papier-mâché. and he looks like now this would be for just 2017, but he looks like he's going to be kind of given the J.J. Nelson role early in Cincy. So it's not like that would have addressed it. What needed to happen was they needed one veteran. They needed just a single veteran that could have helped. And Eric Decker, maybe, you know, an Anquan Boldin, even though we know that would never happen just because of the way the relationship ended. But they needed a veteran to come in and kind of assistance to Fitz while the rest of the guys kind of figured it out. John Brown, you know, Jerron Brown coming back from injury. And you know, Jerron has earned his spot. He is a favorite of Bruce Arians because of the way he's played coming back from injury. And that endears himself to Arians. So, but I think going into this, you were kind of playing with gas and now, you know, you're not getting what you wanted. And it's not absolutely surprising to me that that's happening. It's unfortunate, but it's not surprising.
And you look at, they talked last week about the punting situation. I mean, what are we going to say else about the punting situation? But the receiver one's the most interesting here. The offensive line is going to be interesting how things shake out. And we've referred to it a couple of times, but Ulrich John had a really good game. John Wetzel continues to perform. Tony Bergstrom is showing value.
And he was the second team center. They had Toner playing right guard.
And he was mauling. Right. And so he's looked good at center and at guard. Bergstrom looked good at center in that game. But you're starting to look down the depth chart and you're like, ooh, well, if Ulrich John is playing well, is there room for Will Holden? And if Bergstrom is the best guy for the roster, what do they do with Dorian Johnson?
Yeah, and I just, again, it seems outrageous. But then you look at it and you go, okay, I mean, I guess it makes sense, right? Like, you're going, if you are true to what you say, you're picking the 9 best guys on your offensive line. You're not going to worry about whether or not you drafted them. You're just going to worry about who performs the best. And so far, I think without question, their top 9 offensive linemen. I mean, we know the starters. Those are written basically in pen at this point. 4 of the 5 are written in stone. And I would even say Evan Bain's written in, you know, they're getting the carving materials out to put it in stone at this point. But when you look at it, you know that you're going to have DJ Humphries, Mike Iupati, AQ Shipley, Bame, and then Jared Valdir. So then the question has always been, you know, does Colt Hohner make the team? Does John Wetzel make the team? But those guys seem like locks now. I mean, they seem like
they absolute
100% locks. And so now the question is, does Ulrich John make the team? Can Will Holden overtake him? Because through 2 preseason games, I don't know a single person that would say that Will Holden has played better than Ulrich John. No matter if you subscribe to Pro Football Focus grades or not, just from the naked eye, Ulrich John's been the better player.
Yeah.
And then
Go
ahead.
What I was going to say is the thing with, say, a year ago, Cole Toner. I questioned the draft pick from the beginning. I thought there was no way he's going to make anything. I thought it was a wasted pick. But even by, I guess maybe it's just too early, but he flashed. I mean, there were things that they were saying things in the preseason about things that they liked about him, that they saw the potential in him. Dorian Johnson only played when Trevor Knight came out. So he is literally behind every single guard. We haven't heard a single positive thing about him. We haven't heard negatives yet, but in the same thing with Will Holden, I mean, seeing versatility. But, I mean, there's still time, obviously. There's 3 more games.
There's
plenty. But they have to show something.
Well, and I, you and I have talked about it before the camp started. The question was, Toner you know, did Toner make this roster? You know, he's bouncing around to different positions and working at different positions, and we didn't know. And all of a sudden, he's a lock. I mean, he's 100% a lock. I mean, God forbid injury, but at this point, he's a lock. You know, Wetzel's a lock. We talked about their affinity for Wetzel and that it would have to be just a catastrophic training camp and preseason for him on the field, and it hasn't been that. And then you look at, like you said, Dorian Johnson, he's literally the last guard off the bench at this point. That's disheartening. I mean, that's all you can say. It's disheartening. But, and now you and I talked about this, so we're going to float a theory. We're not sure if this is accurate or not, but we're going to float a theory. And that is, maybe the Cardinals know, between the health issues, where, you know, I know of three teams that had him off their board completely because of the health issues with his liver. And the fact that they're not playing him, maybe they think they can get him on the practice squad. Maybe they know he's not ready to be a backup in the NFL. He's not going to, you know, he's probably wasn't going to dress on game days anyways. When you look at it overall, maybe they're trying to sneak him onto the practice squad. That's the one, like, okay, maybe this is a ploy. Maybe this is a play to really get him on the practice squad because they do like him and they just kind of want to hide him.
Let's wrap up this segment on Rise Up C Red and come back for one final thing we're going to talk about. So coming up next on Rise Up C Red, we're going to talk about the game against the Bears this weekend. What are the things that we want to see from the Cardinals as we come back this weekend? What are the things specifically that we want to see? Three things each. So that's coming up next on Rise Up C Red. We're back on Rise Up C Red for the final segment. We're going to talk about the Bears game. What are the three things that we want to see each? For me, you know, and you're going to talk about this as well, but I want more, and this is the same thing that you have, more of the same from the starting offense and the starting defense. I want them to play efficiently.
100%. You want a continuation. You want it to almost be like their second drive, right? Like, you saw their first drive, it ended in a field goal. Okay. Stupid penalty by the Raiders gave them a fresh set of downs. Bruce Arians has said, you know, in a regular game, in a real game, he's leaving the points on the board. So we've got a field goal drive out of the first team offense and a made field goal. So, you know, yay, Phil Dawson. So now you're getting your second drive. And let's not forget, it took them eight games to score any points. I believe it was in the first quarter, wasn't it? Or like, so they were not efficient last season to start the season. And so now we're waiting, you know, and now we've already got a field goal in their first possession of the game. Like, all right, this is more of what we expected. Let's continue that in week two. They're supposedly going to get 20 snaps. You can't tell me if they get another drive like they had this week, that they're going to come out for a second drive. You know, if I'm talking about the continuation with the penalty. So, you know, if they get 12 to 15 plays, are they really going to bring him out for a second drive if they go down and score a touchdown? Maybe part of them, but probably not David Johnson, probably not Larry Fitzgerald, and I'd be surprised if they brought out Carson Palmer at that point.
What else do you want to see from the Cardinals coming this weekend?
You know, you talked about the first team defense and you wanted to see more of the same, but I want to see one different thing. I want to see a sack, or I want to see a turnover created by somebody that's going to contribute. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the first team, but, you know, somebody like a Buda Baker, a Son Reddick, making a play, making not just a tackle behind the, you know, short of the first down or something, but a kind of game-changing play, a play that activates everything, kind of like what you saw with Josh Bynes in the Raiders game, where he, you know, he caused the fumble that was recovered by Harlan Miller, and then, you know, fumbled by Harlan Miller, but didn't get called a fumble by Harlan Miller. And then, I'd like to see that, whether it's, you know, Bethel or Brandon Williams or Tremont Williams or one of the safeties, you know, somebody make a splash play.
And it would be excellent. What I want to see as well, I want to see Kerwin Williams. I mean, he only had the one kickoff and one punt. I want to see him do something on more than one as well. If he's going to be the return guy for the first half of the season, I want to see a preview of it. I want to see flashes of several different players.
Right. And then my final thing is, one, I want to see Will Holden respond to his bad game. Guys have bad games, especially when they're playing left tackle. I don't care if it's first team or last team, right? But he can answer it. He can answer the bell. Can he come out and respond? Because as we talked about with he and the other guy that I'll get to, is we want to see them respond. We want to see them kind of make this roster. We don't want to see Tony Bergstrom and Ulrich John, as great of stories as Ulrich John is, we don't want to see them make the roster over draft picks. So,
right. We want those draft picks to develop, especially since, you know, what were we talking about in May? At the end of April and in the beginning of May, we were talking about how potentially these two guys could afford the Cardinals in a season from now to have let go of Jared Valdir and Mike Iupati, open up a bunch of cap space while developing young players on that line. And that doesn't look even close to possible right now.
Right. So hold and respond. And Dorian Johnson, can you please get on the field? Like,
right.
Can you just get on the field for a little bit?
Of course. And, this is the summer of Blaine Gabbert. So let's see more good Blaine Gabbert. Let's keep feeding that fire. You know, I think I'm driving the hype train on this. I want Blaine Gabbert to make all sorts of news in the preseason and then to sit on the bench for the rest of the year. But I want to keep that hype train going, because then it creates intrigue for 2018. It won't create any intrigue for 2017. But I want him to continue to make progress. That way we can set the stage for all sorts of debate for 2018 and not have it feel hopeless because Blaine Gabbert stinks.
Well, and I think another thing that we want to see, and this is, you know, a little odd, but we know that the Cardinals liked Blake Bortles a couple years ago. You know, the rumor, we don't know who the quarterback was, but there was a rumor that they liked one of the quarterbacks coming out this year quite a bit. Now, not enough to move up to draft one, but they liked one of them. Maybe it was Mitch Trubisky. Maybe they really liked Mitch Trubisky, and then, you know, it was just clear it was too rich for their blood to go up to number two. And so you kind of want to see Mitch Trubisky play well, right? Because you kind of want to know if that was the guy they liked. Since Blake Bortles is getting talked about being benched in Jacksonville, you'd like to see that they scouted a quarterback well. So maybe, you know, maybe, just maybe, it was Mitch Trubisky, and Trubisky played extremely well in week one of the preseason. And so maybe he plays well against the Cardinals' third team defense or fourth team defense. You know, a lot of these guys that are going to be selling insurance next week, and you can say,
oh, they still got a couple more weeks. It's all right. They've got to the end of August.
Oh yeah. You're right. Okay. So for two more. Selfishly, you kind of want to see, you know, all these quarterbacks perform well and then be like, okay, so they liked one of them. We're not sure who it was, but they liked one of them enough. You know, they liked one of them. So they're going to, they're back on track. Because the other thing is, if they didn't like DeShone Kizer, he's looked well, you know, played well in Cleveland. So, and then obviously we know about Derek Carr. So, but let's see one of these guys perform well, and then we'll be like, we'll just make up that they were the one that the Cardinals wanted and just couldn't get to.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And then the final thing I want to see, I want to see somebody step up in the secondary for that, what I believe will be the ninth defensive back spot, whether that's a combo corner safety and a Harlan Miller or Rudy Ford, whether that's an Ironhead Gallon. I want somebody to make a stance and say, hey, I'm ready for this. Preferably, I'd like to see Miller or Ford, just because they're draft picks and that sort of thing. But I'd like to see somebody take some sort of play well enough to say, okay, they're putting themselves on this roster, because it seems that that last defensive back spot every week when I put together my new 53-man roster projections, and I'm going, well, is it? No, I don't. Basically, it doesn't matter who it is, and I'd like that decision to be clear.
Right, and it's not at this point. I mean, we know there's going to be Patrick Peterson, Justin Bethel, Tremon Williams, and Brandon Williams. We know that there's going to be Buda Baker, Tyron Matthew, Antoine Bethea, and Tyvon Branch. So one of these guys needs to force themselves on this roster, right?
Yes.
Like we don't want another situation where they cut the wrong guy again, like they may have with who was the guy last year?
Marky Christian, when they tried to keep Drew Butler around? Or are they going to try and keep Leone and Weil on the roster to compete for another couple of weeks? They would totally do that. We can't decide. They're going to compete some more.
I will say this. Now, there's only two punts, you know, one punt each, but I think you have to be a little more excited about the fact that they weren't terrible this week. What do we have, a 65-yarder and a 61-yarder? So
and another really badly missed field goal. So let's hope Dawson never gets hurt.
Right, and that was something I talked about actually with my dad. I'm like, if they make this punter decision based off how bad these guys are kicking in the preseason, and say, well, this guy kicked less worse field goals in the preseason, because let's be honest, there hasn't been anybody that's actually kicked well in the field goal department outside of Phil Dawson. And then they let the wrong punter go. Oh man, like the whole we need this guy to kick in an emergency thing is, I don't know, it's kind of weird, but you know, so let's hope that one of them shows something here soon.
That'll end this episode. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. You can find our lovely podcast on all sorts of mediums. You can find it on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, on Blog Talk Radio, on either one of our fine sites at revengeofthebirds.com or cardswire.com, also on Audio Boom, and heck, on social media. It's on Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red, Facebook's Rise Up Sea Red. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week. Go Cardinals and rise up, Sea Red.